you talk about being people first. Are we perfect? No, we're not perfect. But if you're people first and you say that, you better deliver on it. Because if you don't, you know, business is about building trust. And if you violate that trust any way, shape, or form, people remember that forever.
Welcome to ProCo 360. I'm your host, Dave Tabor. The show tagline is Live, Work, Love Colorado. And this is the show featuring entrepreneurs who could be successful anywhere and choose Colorado. In this episode, I'm repurposing a radio interview with John Hayes, Chairman, President, and CEO of the Ball Corporation. Friends, this isn't just the new hot Colorado company. Ball is an $11 billion company with over 17,000 employees in 100 locations around the world. Again, they're based here in Colorado. They're making millions of cans a day, and Ball Aerospace applies technologies gained through its history. It's an honor to have interviewed John. He's such a great leader, applying rock-solid principles of leadership, entrepreneurship, and culture, and he's a great guy. Since this interview was originally for radio, you may notice an awkward cut here or there, but I know you'll enjoy the conversation and be proud that Colorado is home for Ball Corporation. First, thanks to sponsors Community Banks of Colorado and MicroStar Keg Logistics. I appreciate their support for Colorado entrepreneurs and for this show. Okay, let's get on with my interview with John Hayes of Ball Corporation. John Hayes from Ball, you've been actually working with craft beer companies, haven't you?
Yeah, in fact, our first entree into that was way back in the early 2000s with the Oscar Blues folks. And, you know, they've never been in a glass bottle, and all of craft was in glass. And so we started with them, and it's been quite a ride. Great,
you know,
company.
It is. And the thing, and we'll talk about this some more in a little bit, but this idea that, you know, people perceive that glass can be better for beer, and you're really shaking up the market by proving that not to be the case.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, too often people think of cans as your father's package, but really over the last decade, started in large part by Dale and the folks up at Oscar Blues, they really helped change the perception. You know, without getting into technicalities, yeah, when you think of alcohol, two things degrade it, light and oxygen. And when you think about a glass bottle, you get oxygen in through ingress of the cap, and mm-hmm. then you have light, obviously, through the glass. So the can is a perfect package. He recognized that,
yep,
and that's why he's never been in glass. And we've been seeing 30% growth on a nationwide basis in the craft beer industry over the last 5-6 years.
Well, I think that's a great example of why this show is interesting to me, and I hope it's interesting to others, because, you know, here's Ball Corporation based in Colorado enabling this kind of a transition among maybe what is also recognized as Colorado's one of Colorado's fastest growing businesses, the craft brewery world. And so they've learned from Ball how they can deliver a product in a more in a more effective way, and certainly a more creative way. So
absolutely, yeah. And it's, you know, it's good for the communities as well, because when you have a vibrant community in which you live and operate, all boats rise with the tide.
I think so. You're listening to ProCo 360. I'm your host, Dave Tabor, and this is the show featuring entrepreneurs and business leaders who could be successful anywhere and choose Colorado. I'm speaking with John Hayes of Ball Corporation, an amazing $11 billion Colorado company.
Well, one of the things that we've actually been doing is that people are often in the craft brewing industry are familiar with the growlers, the big,
right.
And we've actually created the Crowler, which is a can growler, 32 ounce, that you can literally have it filled at the micro beer location that you're at.
Really?
You can take it on the road. Yeah.
Well, that's intriguing to me, because one of the things I asked John about this before we even started the show this morning, and because my plan and prepping and all this, because I really admire Ball for leadership, mm-hmm. for values, being a values-driven company and so forth. And I said, well, can we talk about, are there some aspects of entrepreneurial practices that you're still – that get you going? And here's a great example.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, it's people often associate entrepreneurialism with startup, and it mm-hmm. doesn't have to be. Ball's been 136 years old. We've been in 46 different businesses over that time. We have, if you look at it from a portfolio perspective, we've had more portfolio companies than many private equity or venture capital firms. And so it gets into the DNA. And I think you are what you think you are. And what we try and do is constantly grow and develop and make sure that we're around for another 136 years.
That's pretty interesting. And a sort of an approach to our interview together that I wasn't planning, and now I'm excited to go there. You're listening to ProCode 360. I'm your host, Dave Tabor, and this is the show featuring entrepreneurs and business leaders who could be successful anywhere and choose Colorado. You're listening to my interview with John Hayes of Ball Corporation, an amazing $11 billion Colorado company.
I really want to talk about this notion of being a values-based company. Mm-hmm. And before we even got into that, we started talking about how entrepreneurial Ball really is. So I want to come back to that in a minute. First, let's talk about being a values-based company.
Well, let's tie the two together, because Ball has such a long, rich history. And it was founded, as I said, 136 years ago by five brothers with $100. And 2 months after they started a business, their warehouse burned down. And they ended up with nothing. And long story short, they were able to recapitalize. They moved to Muncie, Indiana, where most people think of Ball mm-hmm. State University.
Yeah.
This was a university that was nearly bankrupt, and the Ball brothers bought it out of bankruptcy to provide a commuter school for the folks in the state of Indiana. And so this is where I'm tying entrepreneurship with values, because Ball has, for our first 100 years, was a family-based company. And they had generations of people in it. And even though there's no one from the Wall family in the company today, the values, the family-based values about humility, about can-do, about treating people as you would like to be treated, that flows through who we are. And it's a very important part of it. And I think any entrepreneur that starts up, you have to have a strong set of values and knowing what you're doing and knowing what your purpose is. And I think those two together, even though we're 136 years old or 136 years young, we still have that sense of family, that sense of value, and the sense of exploration, which mm-hmm. is so critical in the entrepreneurial world.
You know, it is critical, and it seems sort of an anathema that it's a contradiction. People think of large companies, and they just, you know, even me, as I know you, and I'm still having trouble getting my arms around, how can a company of the size of Ball remain entrepreneurial at heart? You know, I mean, how can you really do that?
Well, you know, any good entrepreneur knows that the most important thing you got to get right is the people side. Yes, you have to have an idea. Yes, to have the perseverance. Yes, to have the passion. But you got to have great people around. And mm-hmm. we have wonderful people. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, our culture is very much centered first and foremost about getting the right people, because mm-hmm. it doesn't matter what business you're in. You could be making satellites. You can be making beverage cans. You can be making penny blanks for the U.S. government, which one time we did. But if you don't have the right people, you don't get it right. We always joke at Ball that business is 95% about people. If you get mm-hmm. that right, the rest mm-hmm. usually follows.
Well, I want to challenge you a little more, but first I want to play a clip, because I want to contextualize how I'm going to challenge you around this. A guy named Newt Hannes, who I found on a TED Talk, talks about reasons companies fail and how to avoid them. And I want to play clip 36.
Companies become, by nature, less innovative as they become more competent. And this is, of course, a big worry to CEOs. And I hear very often questions phrased in different ways. For example, how can I both effectively run and reinvent my company? Or how can I make sure that our company changes before we become obsolete or are hit by a crisis?
So what do you think about that, John? How do you think about that?
Well, there's some truth to that, but it's because if you get stuck in risk aversion, and too often people think as you get bigger, you put processes in and you get risk aversion. I think the key is to be as decentralized as possible and push decision making down, because it can't be 2, 3, 5, or 10 people at a company making decisions. The best information is happening on the shop floor, is happening out with customers. And if you created an environment where you're truly empowering people to behave as if it was their own, because indeed it is, that's where you get the great ideas from. And it's that constant struggle of, I'll call it, process and efficiency versus creativity and innovation.
Do you have any examples that come to mind of something that really sort of that inspired you, that generated from somebody below, you know, from the shop floor, as you example? You know?
Great example. So we're in the aerospace business. We got into it in the 1950s. A couple of CU professors. That's why we're based in Boulder, Colorado. Ed Ball, who was the CEO at the time, this was after the Second World War. They knew that glass, and think about the mason jars, that was in decline. Mm-hmm. He knew that they needed technology, because of the 46 different businesses we've been in, technology was the thread that ran through each of them. he stumbled across someone that had a technology used in the refinement of making glass. Technology failed, but he was smart enough to pivot, and it was very good at polishing glass. Hmm. We made the one of the first optical sensors for NASA before NASA was even going back in the 1950s. You fast forward that to today, and we have an initiative going on right now that when you're making satellites and you're making sensors, you're creating a ton of data. In the classified world for the government, we do a lot of business in terms of extrapolating and exploiting that data. Think of data analytics. Mm-hmm. We are now taking that. We have a small Skunkworks type team developing that for the commercial markets. And it's not transactional data processing. It's things that you can really look through and use it to make predictive information become available and become real.
So this notion of Skunkworks that started, I think, is early. I was looking it up not long ago. I think it's the topic, the name came up in the 60s, I think, a long time ago, right? But the idea of Skunkworks is basically a very small team of people that are outside of the typical structure. So exactly. They're free to work. No one bugs them. They don't have to report up. And
bug them a little bit.
A little, yeah.
You're listening to ProCo 360. I'm your host, Dave Tabor, and I'm speaking with John Hayes of Ball Corporation. Please visit ProCo360.com, where you can subscribe to my newsletter for episode information, my blog, and books that I'm listening to on Audible. Again, that's ProCo360.com. I hope you're enjoying this episode with John Hayes. Please rate ProCo 360 in your app and share it with friends.
One of the things about a Skunkworks deal is that there's minimal reporting, minimal justification, and all that, right? I mean, are you able to do that at Ball without creating problems?
It's not easy, but yes, you can. You just have to have a mindset about it, and you have to have a vision, you have to have a dream, you have to have realistic expectations. One of the benefits of working for a big company and having an environment like this, though, is we're not scarce of resources.
Yeah.
And so we can take a little bit more risk in a distributed way that doesn't you don't have to look at it as binary, saying you will fail or you will succeed, because we all know that not every idea is going to be successful. And so when you have a distributed mindset around that and get the right people on it and then let them go and chase and dream and hunt – you know, at some point in time, you have to put a little bit more structure about it, but you got to let them breathe early on.
How many of those things do you have going on now at Ball where people are spending your money chasing and dreaming and hunting?
You know, not as much as perhaps I'm making it sound, but it's a mindset. And so even in our existing businesses, we talked about craft beer early on. When we first were working with Oscar Blues to get cans, it was hundreds of thousands. Just to give you context, we make 300 million cans a day. 300 million cans
a day. Those numbers are mind-boggling.
Now imagine if someone comes and says, I want to buy 250,000 cans in a year. It's very easy to say forget it. But, you know, it's much like the Red Bull story. Who would have thought that they'd be buying and using 5 billion cans a year right now? And the craft beer industry, it was not – Dale was the first ones and the Oscar Blue folks, we were the first ones selling to the craft beer market. It was zero back then. Mm-hmm. Now we're selling close to 2 billion cans in the craft beer market.
And have you had – you must have had experiments that – I mean those experiments have succeeded beautifully. You must have had experiments that didn't.
Absolutely.
What's your take on that, and how do you manage that?
Well, again, it's in a distributed way. We back in the early 2000s, when we were really starting to put our initiative around this, I was asked to lead the charge in part because I was so passionate about it. And we used to talk about celebrating failure. And what you mean by that is, you know, you have to have a mindset that not everything's going to work. The key is when you know in your heart it's not going anywhere, celebrate that failure and move on. I think too often people kind of get a mindset that, we are going to make this work. And they put their head down. And sometimes you got to take a step back and say, wait a minute, time out. We got to either pivot or we have to think about shutting it down. And so when you think about it that way, there's hundreds of projects that are going on at our company like that.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. I saw an article too about this was in the journal, the argument for the cloud and Amazon. They were talking with Amazon's Andy Jassy, who is the CEO of Amazon Web Services. And the interviewer asked, tell us about something you failed at. And he talks about their phone that didn't do very well. But then he says the ultimate product didn't resonate in a broad way, but the people who worked on that did a terrific job and they've been rewarded in the company. Mm-hmm. They've moved on to other initiatives. Yeah. That's cool, I think.
Yeah. And it's a delicate balance, because certainly in a for-profit enterprise, you got to be a hunter the whole time. But we try and take a long-term perspective in terms of behaving like an owner. And when you take a long-term perspective and you get everyone to try and believe that whatever they do with the company, they're a part of that ownership of it, it creates a mindset. And it creates that distributed nature that I mentioned, that people should be rewarded if things aren't going well and they raise their hand and say, hey, we got to pivot here.
I think that takes a strong leader probably to do it differently, because I'll lay it right out there. Most in my experience, most public companies don't have that sort of approach at, you know, this purpose over profits thing that you know, is a statement that you make often. And public companies are under tremendous, probably unhealthy pressure.
Well, it gets back to what I was saying before. If you have a value-based system that you can funnel and use as a lens for decision-making, mm-hmm. good things usually happen. We're big believers that be real careful about what you incent, because you will get those behaviors, and both in a positive mm-hmm. and a negative mm-hmm. way. And we think, you know, our culture about focusing on the customer, focusing on the people, you know, making sure you're doing it in the long term and making sure everyone feels emotionally connected to what you're trying to do, mm-hmm. it creates attitude. And when you have attitude and that can-do mm-hmm. attitude, good things usually happen.
If it's the right attitude, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I remember if we don't have time to finish this, we'll come back to it. But at a talk you did at DU, you mentioned being kind of put off by a comment you heard a student say that hers was the first generation to put purpose first.
Yeah.
And that sort of seemed to bug you.
It did bug me, because as I said, we are proud to work for a 136-year-old company that started with values. I mentioned the Ball State University example, the local town in Muncie, Indiana. The hospital was founded by the Ball brothers. Even a couple of years ago here in Colorado with the floods, within 24 hours, our company was giving $1 million, and it was real out to the people in need. It was real mm-hmm. simple. Why? I'll never forget this. I was traveling all week. I got back Friday morning. Remember, the floods were kind of Wednesday, Thursday. We had over 30 of our family, 30 of our people at Ball directly impacted and didn't have a place to sleep. If that's not an impetus for doing the right thing in the community, I don't know what is.
Yeah. We're having a great conversation all around sort of being a purpose-driven, values-driven business. And, you know, people may assume that because Ball is such a successful company and your Fortune 500 and so forth company that what can entrepreneurs learn from a guy like John Hayes, who's running this amazingly successful company? And, you know, actually quite a lot, mm-hmm. a lot about values. In fact, I'm going to go there right now. What do you think entrepreneurs can learn and should learn from Ball Corporation? And I realize you're a humble guy and you'd like to be humble on behalf of Ball too, but if they were to look at an aspect of Ball that, you know, you think they could benefit from, what do you think that trait would be?
The human spirit wants to be part of something bigger than themselves. That's why we have professional sports teams. That's why we have organized religions. That's why we have book clubs and car clubs and everything else. It astounds me how few for-profit enterprises don't understand that if you can get people emotionally connected in what you're trying to do and give them a higher sense of purpose, they're all in. And I think as anyone who's starting a company, as you probably know, several years ago, I helped start the Denver Cutthroats. That was one of the things we were trying to do, is get people emotionally connected to what we were trying to do. Because if you can get that, business is hard enough on its own.
Yep.
But if you can get people who are emotionally connected, emotionally invested, and as we call it, all in, that's half the battle.
I'll tell you a funny story. I've used this as an illustration of that a lot. When my son was starting as an engineer at CU, I was concerned that there's a lot of distractions at CU. Mm-hmm. And I took him and a number of his fellow students on a tour of several manufacturing facilities or engineering related facilities around Colorado. One of them was Ball, and they saw all different places. I wanted them to feel inspired to study, really. Mm-hmm. But the one place, so I asked them after we went to all of them, and they were very different: Ball, Medtronic, and a couple of others I won't mention because of the outcome of the story. One of them had beautiful furnishings, cappuccino machines, foosball, all kinds of really cool stuff for young people, and none of them wanted to work there. And I asked them why, and they said, because the work is menial. Mm-hmm. They'd be sitting at a cube doing what, you know, putting their practice. No one, they wanted work that they believed in.
Yep.
And I found that fascinating, that it's not about foosball and cappuccino.
it's getting back. It's about empowering people and giving them the authority and the license to push and drive and cajole and raise their hand if they see something wrong. Mm-hmm. It's that sounds real easy. When you're in a large organization, it's tough to keep that mindset going. And that's one of the things we try and create. Last night I was at the there's here in Denver this weekend, there's a National Society of Black Engineers, and they have their annual their regional meeting, and we were there, and we had a hospitality suite afterwards, and all these kids coming in, they're college kids, sophomores and juniors, and I got so much energy because they were saying the same thing. They were pumping us about what does Ball do and how do they do it and what's the environment like? What is it like to be an intern? And I said, you better be ready to show up because you're not getting people coffee. We give you real work. And here's the benefit for us. Mm-hmm. When we get someone like you who has a totally different perspective, because we have been doing it for the same way for so many years and get a totally different perspective, we want your ideas because that's how we get better.
Wow. I bet that was pretty inspiring for them.
Oh, you know, like I said, I was getting complete energy.
You know, and that's such a neat thing, because you see now companies like GE advertising and in network TV trying to convince young, talented people that – we have jobs that you want. Right. You know, you don't have to go to one of these startups that, you know, is likely to fail. But really, they're not saying that. What they're really saying is we're an inspiring place to be.
Mm-hmm.
And to attract talent, you have to cut through that noise of the startup world to say this is an inspiring place.
I've said it once. I'll say it again. You don't need to be a startup to be entrepreneurial.
Yeah.
You can be a big company. It's about mindset and it's about empowerment. And if you get, and that's where we say we focus on the people. If you get those things right about empowering people and motivating people and giving them the resources to do it and then getting out of their way, giving them structure, but then getting out of the
way. You know, speaking of resource, I'll tell you another story. Again, you know, I learned a lot from both my sons. My younger one's an Air Force ROTC kid, and I admire him so much for that. My other son, who's the engineer, was talking about how he's now working at a well-funded startup, really well-funded. It's one you've probably heard of. I'm not going to mention. But the thing, you know, you've always heard this notion of pick two, cheap, fast, or good, you know, and you can pick two. And he's like, Dad, we have all the money we need. All we have to focus on is being good and fast.
Right.
And you know, I would think that if a bright, aspiring, talented person was at Ball, you know, this person has resources. They can do exciting things.
Absolutely. In fact, I go a step further. It's not good. You want great. Because great wins long term.
Mm-hmm.
Good will win for the intermediate term. Mm-hmm. Cheap, there's the best way we can cut costs, let's turn out the lights and go home. We won't have any revenue, but we'll be lowest cost.
Yeah, yeah.
You're listening to ProCo 360. I'm your host, Dave Tabor, and this is the show featuring entrepreneurs and business leaders who could be successful anywhere and choose Colorado. I'm speaking with John Hayes of Ball Corporations, an amazing $11 billion Colorado company.
You've talked also about culture over money, you know, culture. Any further thoughts about culture?
If you get the inputs right, the outputs will follow. And so let's define what those inputs are. Getting great people who are emotionally connected and inspiring about what you're doing and in a value system that they can grab onto and they can connect with. You do that and you get markets that you think you can explore. And that's largely driven by finding good people to help find those good markets. And then you get the right processes around that to enable them and don't stifle them. You do that right, the profits will come.
You know, process is an interesting word because to me it doesn't belong in the same sentence with culture. And yet it has to, doesn't it?
How do you manage
process so that it doesn't stifle culture?
Process does not mean bureaucracy. Process means consistency, the way you do things, consistency, because if you have everyone going out for a pass, as I like to say, think about your quality processes and systems, and you have an issue and you don't know how to trace it back. When you're selling 300 million beverage cans a day, or you're making satellites that you send off into outer space and you don't have a second chance to fix it, You have to have the right processes to do it. It's finding it in a way that you allow the people to help develop those processes and don't put bureaucracy on the business.
How do you have processes that don't become bureaucratic?
It's a constant challenge because what you're talking about is a top-down process or a bottoms-up process?
Because really, I mean, even entrepreneurs I speak with who grow from 10 employees to 25 employees say now it's becoming bureaucratic. Now it's becoming, you know, even with 25 employees, they're saying that people want jobs. They don't want vision anymore. They want, you know, they're not driven by purpose. Now they're driven by who's doing what. Mm-hmm. How do you think about that when you're at a big company?
Yeah, there's not one stock answer. But think about this. I'm not in this business, so I'm running the risk of getting in danger here. But if you're starting an app, you have processes by which you're writing that code. You have processes by which you're delivering it to the customer. You have processes by when you click, the customer clicks on and has that customer experience. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm talking about, processes. I'm not talking about here is a 10-page list of things you need to check off. That is bureaucracy.
Yeah, yeah. So when you think about I admire you at a new level today because you're still thinking as an entrepreneur as you run a large company. If you were going to start something new right now, you know, as an entrepreneur, either at Ball or separately, what would you do that would get your juices flowing?
In terms of
– if you see opportunities for – you know, if you were going to start your own business today, a new business today.
You know what I would do? I would go and pluck the five most creative people that think totally differently from me, and I'd get them in a room. Because if you get – as I said before, if you get the people right, they will find the opportunity. And I think too often ideas fail because – you don't have the people behind to execute. I said before, 95% of business is getting the right people and getting the right people focused on what you're trying to do. And so if I were starting something, and that's why we talked earlier about this, we don't call it Skunk Works, but this little project off the ball, you get great people thinking creatively, and then you let them go and you let them breathe. And good things usually happen.
So if you were starting a business, you wouldn't even name it. You wouldn't even conceive of it. You would pull great thinkers together and say, let's start something.
I certainly have ideas about certain things that I won't necessarily discuss or disclose here. But I would, the first thing I would do is I wouldn't be putting together a business plan. I'd get the people first because they're the ones that are going to have to execute on the business plan. So they might as well be part of it up front.
Wow. Hey, I'm speaking with John Hayes, CEO, President, and Chairman of Ball Corporation. This is Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor. And along those lines, Kathleen Petrie, who runs your communications, told me that you've done things internally to even perpetuate this notion of culture and belief in people. One of the things she gave me a quick example is that you have a round boardroom table, for example. I mean, what kinds of things do you do internally, including that really drive culture?
Well, we talk about we are a family-oriented type company, even though there's no Ball family left in it. Mm. And we talk of ourselves as behaving as owners and being partners in this endeavor. So if you're in a partnership, and I came from Wall Street, that a lot of the great companies started as partnerships. They don't have a square table with someone or a rectangle table with someone at the end. They have a partner table that's a round table because everyone has a seat at the table and everyone has an idea to contribute because it's our money that we're trying to invest.
Well, you're all about partnerships and you've used the notion I've heard you describe the partnerships you like as intense relationships, not just relationships, but intense relationships. Right. What's that about for you?
It's that emotional connectivity. Because if you're emotionally invested in something, you're not just punching a clock going in 9 to 5, it's part of your bloodstream. It's part of your DNA. And if you can get an environment where people feel part of something bigger than just themselves, good things happen.
Well, and you also have used a term, something around jigsaw of life, this notion of doing that in your personal life and your professional life. Do you think that the kinds of people you want have those same attributes, you know, in their could you meet somebody casually and know that they're kind of an interesting fit for Ball?
Yeah, without question.
Really?
Quick story. We don't have much time, but I actually joined Ball because I had worked for a service. I was working on Wall Street. and I did not love what I do. And I remember it took an accident. I was in the hospital and recovering for a couple months. And I remember thinking, I am just dragging my head off the pillow every morning. Mm. And so what's important to me? And it began a journey by which I learned to understand I love working with people with shared values and are emotionally connected into something as I am. I remember Ball was based in Muncie, Indiana. I was living in Chicago at the time, told my wife, I would love to work with those Ball folks, but I'd never ask you to move to Muncie, Indiana.
Wow.
4 months after, they announced they're moving to Colorado, and 6 months after that, I joined the company.
Wow. What a great story.
In this episode of ProCode 360, I've shared a conversation with John Hayes of Ball Corporation. He is an amazing leader who demonstrates that leading with integrity, culture, and a focus on people is consistent with success in Colorado. To my listeners, thanks for joining me on ProCode 360. This is Dave Tabor. My mission is to feature world-class entrepreneurs who could be successful anywhere and choose Colorado. You can help by subscribing to the ProCode 360 podcast via your app and reviewing the show, and by subscribing to the ProCode 360 newsletter. Thanks again to show sponsors, MicroStar Keg Logistics, Community Banks of Colorado and Jones and Keller, and to show engineer Mike here at Third and James Studios. This show and past shows are available at ProCode360.com and via your favorite podcast app. Just search ProCode360. Thanks for listening, and thanks for sharing.